It's interesting. I was thinking ahead because I have a lot of pressure on these two to come up with the next slide.
Excuse me, because see, we have the product of my hard work.
Right, it's very good. To come up with what's going to be the next one before we do the next one. So the next one, I started looking at an alignment from the left. We're going to learn alignment from the left after this. Of Deltavis? No, Yutiscus. And that's what we're on Yutiscus. Everyone knows what Yutiscus is? Does it? If you do that? No, you don't. It's the Rosh Hashanah of Hasidus. That's what we call it. It's the time of the redemption of the Alter Rebbe from prison. And with him, he said, when I was released, Hasidus was released. Because, you know, everything that goes down, we talked about spinning it on frequencies, right? Everything that's going on down here in the air down here below is just a mild repercussion of what's going on up above. And so he, the Alter Rebbe, said that there was a kitva, a prosecution up above, upstairs, against Hasidus. And that's why I was in prison. And when I was saying the kapitel in Tilim, Pada B'Shalom Nafshi, on that very moment after I said those words, my release was announced. The kitrug was over, the prosecution was over. And I wrote down, I was looking for, you know, like what we're going to start next week. And the Rebbe says a very astounding thing. It's a Rosh Hashanah, the first Rosh Hashanah. Why is it Rosh Hashanah? What was created on Rosh Hashanah?
The human being.
The human being, right? On the sixth day of creation, the human being. So Rosh Hashanah is the creation of the human being. And the Elder and the Rebbe, Aaron, says Rosh Hashanah of Hasidus is the bringing into down to earth the whole tachlis of what a human being is about, which is the Torah of Hasidus. If the Torah of Hasidus is a vehicle, a tool for embodying, for each and every one of us to embody, how to embody what we were created for in the first place, which is to rectify the world, bring the presence of God in the world. So that's what arts our subject. So I'm just going to very quickly review what we learned the last time, and those who are here could jump in. This sicha, as you see at the top, is in Parshas Vayishlach, right? And in Vayishlach, it says that Yaakov, Vayishlach Yaakov, Yaakov sent Malachim to Esau. And Rashi says on that, Malachim Mamish, that they were really Malachim. So the Mezritcha Magid, who himself, we've learned in the sicha, has an interesting connection with Yud-Tes Kislev, the Mezritcha Magid, who was the teacher of the Alter Rebbe, and held the Alter Rebbe to be his Talmud Mufrak, his special Talmud, he told the Alter Rebbe that you and I, the Magid and the Alter Rebbe, have this day in common. And what was it? The Magid then passed away on Yud-Tes Kislev, after having told the Rebbe that he shared this day with him. So the Sikha opens with a drush of the Mezritcha Magid on this pasuk, Malachim Mamish. We just said what Rashi said. And what?
The Magid told Al-Jabba that they
shared
this and then he passed away.
Then he passed away.
What did he tell Al-Jabba that they
shared this? That's all I know.
What?
That's all I know. That's all that's said in the Sikha, and that's all I've ever heard. What the Mezritcha Magid's drush on Malachim Mamish is the following: that the Ruchnius would stay with Yaakov, and the Mamish, the substantial, would go to Esau. And the Rebbe in the Sifa asks the question. I mean, the whole idea of sending shlichus to Esau is to, what we say in Hebrew, bevar, to rectify. And rectification has to come through some acquisition of some spiritual dimension that didn't exist before. So what does it mean that the spirit, the Ruchnius, stays with Yaakov and the Mamish goes to Esau? So the Rebbe says the way to understand that, it can't contradict the first one, meaning that these Malachim actually did go, right? The meaning, in which this is the introduction to the Sikha, is that when a person interacts with the mamushas of the world, with the substantiality, the coarseness, the humrius, the gashmius of the world, one has to keep the ruchnius intact. Because otherwise, the gashmius can attack you instead of you attacking and rectifying the gashmius. So the ruchnius has to stay with Yaakov. Yaakov is Yisroel, the Jewish neshama. When we interact with the world, when we interact with the world, we have to bring our ruchnius to the world. And so the world doesn't attack us, but rather we bring out the godliness which is latent in the world. Doreen?
Yeah.
How are you? All right. So that's point number one. Everybody got that point? Well, we're going to get into it now. This is where we're about the two-thirds into the Sefer. Now, he explained, he introduced an idea which Sheva brought up before. There's two ways of doing this, And they're embodied in two expressions, right? Well, one is, Kol ma'asecha l'shem shema. All of your deeds should be for the sake of him. And the other is, Bechol derechecha deyeh. In everything you do, you should know God. And what we've explained so far, we've just touched on it, and we'll go deeper in it now. Kol ma'asecha l'shem shemayim. Everything you do should be for the sake of Shema. For the sake of elevating the world, for the sake of bringing godliness into the world. And the other one, the Kol derechecha deyeh, is that you and that world are, the godliness and the world are not two separate things that you are bringing yourself to, but that you experience them. Physicality, emotionality, all the affairs of life are really godly emanations in the first place. So that's Bechol derechecha deyeh. Everything that you do, He is He, God, and godliness is there. And so your perception is there isn't a him and a that. There's a oneness. And that's the beginning of his explanation of the difference between the two, and that's the beginning of the explanation of the difference between what happened before Yetzer Kislev and after Yetzer Kislev. Because there were revelations, right? We had the Zohar. We had the Kisvei Arizal. We had the Baal Shem Tov. Right? And the Baal Shem Tov really starts with what we call Chassidus. But there are shlavim, there are levels, ratchets. Ratchets in the evolution of Chassidus. From Kabbalah to levels of ratcheting in Kabbalah, and then the Baal Shem Tov takes it another step. Baal Shem Tov says this Kabbalah has to be expressed in such a way that it will wake up the people, because Baal Shem Tov is famously quoted as saying that the Jewish people in Europe had fallen into a faint. They were observing mitzvahs, but with a coldness and with a faint. The situation was poor gashmius and it was poor in workmanship. So he injected something special. And that injection is the beginning of Chassidus. And that falls through the Magid. Now comes the Alter Rebbe, and this is in the language of our Rebbe, the Rosh Hashanah of Chassidus. Right, the whole in the man, the human being of Chassidus, if you could say such a thing, comes alive on Yetzer Kislev.
Can I add something that I think it appeared in the Gemara of says why does Hashem call the Jewish people's names all the time? It wakes them up. It wakes them up to see. And so when Yisrael Baal Shem Tov was sent down here to this world, it says in the Tanya that Hashem saw that tzaddikim were very few, so he planted them, each generation. He planted Yisrael Baal Shem Tov because they were in a faint. Yisrael is the name of the nation. He said, Yisrael, say their name.
Right.
That's what I think. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's also like the Russell,
Abraham.
It's also interesting. Think about the rollout of the Parshas, right? We're in Parshas Toldos. But the family starts to grow. And now in this Parsha, there are offspring. And in the next Parsha, those offspring, Vayesed, they go out. They go out further. And what's the next one? After Vayesed is Vayesha. And they settle. So there's even the... Huh?
Isaac.
Or Beishlach. Beishlach. Then they go out, and then they acquire a mission, and they're sent out by the Mishaleah, and then Beyeshiv, and they sit, and they accomplish. So there's a lot of ways that this really rolls up. Okay, with all that, we can start Lay's test. But before we start, I'd like to give anybody here an opportunity, and everybody who's out there who wants to, an opportunity to bring to the table any mishaberos that you want. In general, I want to tell you that the shir, this whole shir, that started more than 4 years ago, was what owes its life and livelihood to the neshama of Shlomi ben Moshe. Bundi is no longer with us, and this shir in general is dedicated to the Lias and neshama of Bundi. Any other names? Sean Alexander, Rasan Esther.
Amalia Rachel Bas Rivka Chana.
This is a.
Someone
else. This is before Shlema.
Yeah.
All right. And the other thing we say, housekeeping, is the way the shiur goes. I usually start pretty much all the time, but we ask people who want to read, and I'll help translate if need be. Okay, so we're on ice test. This is the news about Yom Tov Kislev. This expression, Yefutzim HaNesecha Chutza, anybody knows where that expression comes from? The well springs will spread to the outside.
Baal Shem Tov went up. Yes, on Rosh Hashanah, Baal Shem Tov went up to the Hekel of Mashiach and says, "No."
When will you come?
When are you coming?
And Mashiach answers him, Yefutzim HaNesecha Chutza, when your well springs. And this wellspring is going to be very important. The difference between B'chol Dorachecha Be'egel, when you are totally immersed in, and that everything should be the same Shemayim. It's your Ma'inasecha. The difference between the spring and the water that comes from the spring is the source. So basically what the Baal Shem Tov is what the Mashiach is telling them, not only your teachings, but the very source of your teachings, they're the spring from which they spring. Has to be spread out. Then Hagosa Shel Ha'Olam Kotten Zehod, and it has to be spread out in the conduct of not just the world at large, but Olam Kotten in every single person. So we have to. What the purpose of the Baal Shem Tov basically is telling the Alter Rebbe, what you've been designed to do is to enable every Jewish person to live where everything is kulakad. That there is nothing but God. Ain't old no Bible. That's your mission. In that language, it said, your wellspring should spread out to the very outside. Mudgoshim shnei inyonim. There is emphasized two aspects. One, Aleph. Shemaynis atzma nimshichim yibichinis chutz. And this is what I said. Not just the water, but the springs themselves. The springs should be put inside every Jewish person. Not just that the spring should have an effect, but the spring should be there in every person. Secondly, this spreading out of the fountain head, into the outside, he be'oifin is in a manner the yafutsu. Yafutsu means hispashtus, hochi gadoila berachova, a very, very deep, big, and widespread. Actually, nisha mokim ponlimah, until there's no place which is free of them. This is, I mean, in a nutshell, the mission of Chabad, right? At least one aspect of the mission of Chabad, that no place in the world should be free of the influence of Chabad. Right? Like Coca-Cola, right? Coca-Cola, right? The Mayans. Yeah, I've heard it a number of them. I've heard it actually from a couple of businessmen in my history that said, you know, I was in blah, blah, and I needed this. Before the internet was so developed, you look in a phone book, Chabad, and then you'll find it. Huh? That the keynotes the other night, the keynotes of Shluchim, it was in there, Rabbi, no, the one, the Lipisha guy who gave the speech. What he called, he said, the Chabad is the Hatzolah, the Hatzolah of soul. It's the Hatzolah all over the world. And he was interesting because he has an interesting background himself. He's not a Chabadnik by any means, but he recognizes. And he's a Shtickle Talmud Chacham as well. Yeah. Okay. So the idea is twofold. Number one, what is the magic? The magic isn't drinking the water. The magic is encompassing the source of the water, right? And where does the magic have to take effect? That no place should be free of them, void of them, right? He's translated. There should be no place where the waters haven't touched, haven't reached. So this is a must. It demands that wherever there's a limitation to one's influence, that's not chutzah. That's not chutzah. Outside. You haven't really got there. Right? It was so interesting that the theme of this, I guess it's no accident. First of all, the shluchim are, even though it's not Parshas V'Yishlach, the kinnas of shluchim often takes place because shliach, right? The shluchim, right? And the whole theme of it was basically this. It isn't enough to just touch.
Yeah. Is that why they picked that weekend?
No.
Are you being sarcastic?
No.
That's why they picked
that. Oh, wow.
Yes.
All right.
What are you talking about?
It happened to me. Yeah, but
it's often
connected.
When the dots connect.
It's often connected with Rashi.
That's your manifesto and smoking.
So, until you've touched it all, until
I'm almost as good as Staples.
Yeah. That's really good. That was a big revelation.
I don't remember. Staples?
The store, the office supply store.
Right.
Oh. That was really crazy. I don't know who you are or where you come
from. Now, what does this have to do with us? To our ordinary gut people at this table and out there. Every single Jewish person has a fountain, a spring. Shehi hanashoma, a gezura mitachas kisei hakavod, a soul which is carved out from underneath the holy throne. Va'oid, that's an expression you see in note 42. See it there, it doesn't tell you exactly where it originates, but that's okay. Va'oid lamaylam is that. And even more, yet it's carved out from the throne, but it's rooted even deeper in what's called Tahira Elah, or Tahira, the sublime or holy purity, which we say. Yeah. That's where it originates, right? And Ata Barasa, and it comes down into the world of Riyadh, one level after another. One level after another of descent. So this gets back to the Malachim Mamish, that the fountainhead has, not just the water, the fountainhead, the essence of your soul has to be revealed even in physical things. Hashem etzad asman hem bibichin is chutzah, which on their own we call chutzah. They're outside of it. Mechutz l'tichun neshmasa, outside the boundary of your soul. And the revelation of the fountainhead of the soul in the physical world, it has to be in a manner to the outside, and in the two ways we said above. One, the neshama, not just that the soul dominates or rules, like moyach shelet al alev, as we learn in Tanya, you know, that the godly soul should dominate the animal soul. But not only that, but the godly soul should penetrate every aspect of creation so that every aspect of creation is imbued with the essence of the mind, the essence of the fountain. So he loyed after the chinus kol masach, and here we come on. So the void is not just kol masach l'shem shemai, for the sake of heaven. Yim l'maylam is there, should be higher than this, shebehem atzman hu oyber es Hashem, that they themselves, every physical thing, in the planet, on the planet, and in all the worlds, should be aware of its essential connection to God and behave that. Behold, that's the, in all of your ways, you should know. Every single thing should know in every way that they do, from the basic electrons to the most complicated cultures in all the worlds up above, should know, be aware. I think the electrons probably more aware. We are, because they don't fight it at all, you know. And it's actually broader. I said it's not about electrons, but about animals. Animals have an essential connection. They don't second guess and wonder, you know. They don't have any questions in a minute.
They don't have questions.
You know? They don't have questions because they just are. They just are. They just are. In what respect? I mean, like that. Yeah, you know what she said. The consciousness, in a sense, changes. Yeah.
Right.
Consciousness changes. And, but that itself is just, they go, that's just, they go with the flow. They're going, always going with the flow. There's no difference between them and the flow. They're like just part of the water. If the water changes, they change. No, there's no separation.
Anybody
animals? Animals. Yeah. We're the only creature in the entirety of creation, from the subatomic particles to the world of Atzilus, that gets messed up. We've got free choice for whatever reasons we can discuss at another time. But the whole point is everything should be so penetrated with awareness of God that it just is, and not ashamed is for the sake of it. Everything should be beholded, as we said above, and I mentioned at the beginning of the class in Sivvot. Beis, secondly, shehespashtes haneshama v'haguf, the flow of the neshama in the body, the inyon of, and all of the affairs it has to do with, v'bo'ifen shel yefutsu, has to be in a manner of spreading out. Hespashtes bilti mugbalas, it has to be without limit. And actually, this was also one of the themes of last night's keynote, that doubt is the big limiter. Anxiety is the big limiter. Fear is the big limiter. Fear is the mind killer. Right? So when one is penetrated, immersed in the reality of Hashem, there is no doubt. There is no anxiety. You're always connected. And when you're always connected, there's no limit to what you can do because you're not second-guessing yourself. You're not saying, is this right or wrong? Why isn't anybody helping me? You know, all the things that I say when I'm trying. Not a higher power. You are the power. Or the other way around. The power is you. The power, yeah. You're connected. You're connected. But the power is you. Right. Achalainisha mokam lahergesh aguf. To such an extent that there's no place for feeling the body.
Like maybe a runner, when the runner gets into the zone.
The zone. Into the zone. That's exactly it. In the zone, right? Remember we gave the story of the Elder Rebbe and the salt?
Yeah.
It was a very short story that the Elder Rebbe had a visitor, and all of the Elder Rebbe's students and Kaveram wanted to be to prepare a dish for this Hoshiva guest, and they all prepared a beautiful setting. And then each one of them chapsit, they remember that they forgot to put the salt. So they all put salt in it.
Oh.
And the guests, they hadn't pushed it away, and the Alter Rebbe said, what's the problem? What's the problem? It was all the same thing. It was all the same thing. There's no body and soul. There's just
Mark,
godly.
I can't help you with that on your mat.
That's all right. I wasn't asking.
I can't help you now, Esther.
One piece at a time. If you give it, let's put it this way. You have some trillion amount of cells in the body, right? Each one's getting the message that's appropriate for the cell. But the appropriate message for each of the cells is also a message that's appropriate for how the cell is going to interact with every other cell. So if we get, if I'm just using that as a metaphor, right? So if we all get the message that's designed for us, because we're all different, but sort of globbed on top of that message that's unique to me is the message that we're all getting the same, which is that this is all divinity, this is all God, and this is all a message from you as to how you, with your particular code, need to behave in order to bring about the interoperability so that everything, the whole creation, operates together. That makes sense? Okay. I know, it seems so far away, right? It seems so, and the reason is because we haven't yet materialized this. We haven't yet materialized this. Even if we're preaching, we haven't yet materialized this. Otherwise, the world would be the Shevet Yotzer, as it says in Isaiah. It would be settled. The chapter two days ago in Tanya, the beautiful chapter Sunday Tanya on the healthy organ, or about health. You missed it. I hope you learned it. He brings a metaphor about a healthy body. What makes a body healthy? And then he takes that metaphor and says, what I've really been talking about is the universe, the cosmos. What makes the cosmos? What makes a body healthy is that each entity in the body, number one, is healthy, right, on its own. And part of its health is that it understands how to interoperate with every other body. Yeah. So it uses the blood flow, right? The food comes in, the liver, main organ of the liver, is to take the life force from and leave back the drops, the little digestive forces. And then the life force goes from the liver to the heart and the brain. And it's also, it's interesting, broadening Pasidus, that these three items, they're called Moyach, Lev, Kovod, spell Melech. So what's a Melech? A Melech is someone who has the interest of the whole at heart. So if each one of us get to a point where our self-interests are interests that allow us to be more a part of a whole, or maybe put it even more differently, when each one of us gets to a point where we realize that our true function is to be an integrated part of a whole, so then we will have a healthy body, a healthy universe, a healthy community. So I have to say, I mean, we haven't really got the message.
Even though everything comes from Burundi, you have a lot of religious people that aren't Jewish, but with this religion, conscious of God and godliness, not necessarily a Jewish,
yes,
spirituality. Is that enough? Or it has to be specific?
It's enough if, and this, I mean, I happen to be fairly versed in this because it's a project. What do the non-Jews have to know? They have to know God, first of all. The first of the Sheva Mitzvahs is not to curse God. So not to curse God means that you have an understanding. You don't curse and kick something that you love. So you have to come on to knowledge and love of God. And the Rebbe says in Sikha is very clearly, that all the nations of the world have to learn to see this, because that's the truth of how to understand what you call spirituality. If their spirituality is Emes spirituality, and that's Sheker, fine. And where is Emes? It's still Ein Emes El Atayr. The source of the Sheva Mitzvahs is in the Torah's Moshe. And it's explained in the Gemaras, etc., etc. So, in Hindus and everybody else, right. So I have a Hindu at work, and I speak to him about this. And he's very open. He doesn't give me any pushback whatsoever. He worships certain gods, and I tell him, you know, it's amazing, you know. First of all, as a result of that, he lives a very healthy, he eats very healthy. He's monogamous. The family is very together because they have a sense of something higher than themselves that they have to serve.
Right.
But when I talk about him, about that, not the hierarchy, what's the... I don't know what the right word is. When you have a... He's working down here. And these things do have influence. We know them as always have influence. Right? And they go up to spiritual levels. But I tell him that there's something at the top. He says, oh, well, we know. We know there's something at the top. And we know without that something at the top, none of this stuff would have any effect. But that's not their religion. But he has to know. He has to know that the Advaita Zora is Zora, is strength. So, they're supposed to understand this. Yes.
So,
they need to understand that.
You're saying that we shouldn't teach non-Jewish Torah.
What? Yeah. But what?
Isn't Hasidic Torah? Isn't Hasidic like about one?
This is a nice. I hope you want to go down this road. That's a sideline, but you have to. The label that's given to a Jew who observes the Sheva Mitzvahs to be amongst the righteous of the nations, you have to know, this is a law in the Torah, that all the teachings come from Torah's Moshe and from Moshe Rabbeinu, and were given to Moshe Rabbeinu by God. If you do them simply because, you know, you want to, that's not the tzaddikim u'mesorim. That's the beginning. It's like we have ourselves, like Motayf Shalor L'Shemon Bo L'Shemon, that which doesn't start out for the you know, ultimate reasons. Eventually it will. So they have to know that that these things originate in Torah. I mean, I'm having a conversation now that may be dead-ended with this guy who's the president of a think tank in Washington for the Ethics and Public Policy Commission in Washington, which advertises itself as promulgating Judeo-Christian ethics. So it's a non-governmental organization. It's a private. It's composed of some of the most famous Jewish, Catholic, Protestant thinkers in America that write for all these journals, right? And our conversation was going somewhere until it seems that I started looking into the group. The group mainly has a Catholic orientation. So even though it advertises Judeo-Christian ethics, it's really centered on Christianity. No, I know the guy, Ryan Anderson. He's not Jewish. I mean, I knew he was not Jewish at the start, but I thought he might be open to, but he's really not. But anyway, but it's interesting that there is such an organization, the Ethics and Public Policy Commission, which is trying to influence the government to implement policies which are more in concert with, quote, Judeo-Christian morality. Now, I lost your question. What was your question?
Is it enough for them to learn Hebrew and their sources? The answer is no. They need to learn it from us.
They have to learn it from us.
Right.
Yes, we're the teachers.
So why are we not out?
Well, maybe you want to join me in my campaign, right? One-person campaign. Huh? What? Yeah, maybe we'll put this offline, okay? We can come back to it. It's definitely a passion of mine. I don't want to spend the night on it. Okay, so that's your question.
I was supposed to tell everyone tomorrow that engaged Jacob.
as they have the Russian. Yeah, we are the engaged. We are the betrothed of God, the Jewish people, no other people. That doesn't mean other people don't have any relationship. They do. We just happen to be the wife. Is Chayav Nisa for learning those things which are not shayach to the non-Jew. A non-Jew who keeps Shabbos, for instance. That's one of the things. It's Chayav Nisa, right? Not shayach to keep Shabbos. It is shayach to a non-Jew to know that there is... What? Chayav Nisa. Yeah, okay, so I don't know. Let's put this aside, really. Okay, we'll put this aside. Okay, well, there's a lot of time to talk about some other thing. Okay.
May I share a joke before we move forward that has to do with what was just said? Very quick joke. Okay. So you have, there's a non-Jew who really, it appears as though he's Shomer Shabbos. And finally, someone says to him, I'm sorry, but there's a problem in what you're doing. You know that... You appear to be keeping Shabbos. You want to keep Shabbos, you need to be a Jew. If not, you don't belong keeping Shabbos. He said, but every Shabbos I carry something. And so the person says, yeah, but there's an Eruv. He said, but I don't hold by the Eruv. Okay, I'm going to put myself back on mute again.
Thank you. Anybody want to pick up Ois Yud? Anybody? Okay, go. I'll pick Kohana.
According to everything we said
about, it's from Russian sphere, sovereign. It's logical. Yeah, well, I should translate, right? According to what we said about, it's logical, reasonable. The additional explanation of how we explained earlier, the explanation the Maggid's articulation about that the spirit stayed with Yaakov and the Mamish went to Esau. And he said it right before Yitzchak Kislev, which was the day he passed away, the Maggid. And it's understood also the relationship of this Torah that the Maggid said about Melachim Amish to the redemption of the Alter Rebbe on Yitzchak Kislev. Because on that day, Yitzchak Kislev of the Alter Rebbe, a new thing came into the world, the actual application of the Baal Shem Tov's, of the Mashiach saying to the Baal Shem Tov that your wellsprings have to spread to the outside.
So before that, it was just in conception, or it was
more than a conception, but it was amongst what were you talking about, the Baal Shem Tov?
Yeah,
John, welcome. This is my last copy. I'll answer it. Okay. Good. Right. So we have a question. You asked the question. Repeat the question.
Until this point, when
which point? After Rebbe?
Yeah, when he passes away, it was only in conception, and once he passes away, it became possible for the world.
No. It was in the world. It was in the world by the time of the Baal Shem Tov, right?
So then what was Mitzchadesh?
What was Mitzchadesh is that instead of being the way he put it before, instead of that all of your deeds should be the Shem Shemayim, it was Mitzchadesh is B'chol Derechecha B'Yom.
At that point,
that turned over. Right, yeah. You got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. You read this on the Shema of a good Lamata. The descent of the soul below. The purpose of which is to rectify, clarify, fix the body in all the portions of the world and make them a dwelling place for God. So that's similar. It models the expression of Yaakov sending out Malachim to Esau. Because what was the purpose of it? To rectify.
Yaakov sent Malachim to Esau in order to rectify
him. Rectify Esau. That's the goal. The goal is to, the way Shlomo HaMelech expresses it, is to bring out the Yisur HaOr Min HaChoshek, the advantage of light that's in the darkness. In the darkness. Hmm? Who? He didn't want them to kill him. Is that what you're saying? He was afraid of him? Yaakov didn't want to be in a position to take Esau's life? Is that what you think? So what was his intention? How did he want to accomplish that? To persuade him. To persuade him to put down his weapons. To make peace. Those are, you might call each of them an aspect of what it means to mevarim hasoses, to rectify the sparks. That instead of being full of warfare and anger, what does it say about them in the future? That our weapons will be turned into plowshares. That's what he wants. That's also a metaphor for what we call mevarim hasoses, to rectify, clarify, bring out the holiness, the godliness that's being perverted by the coverings of darkness that bring out people's anger and warfare, etc. There will be no war, right? And we will study war no more. It's all the same thing.
I'm using the iPad, rectifying everything that we have for God.
How does the iPad do that?
Because
it's
using Torah.
Yeah, you mean utilize.
You're defending.
Right, rectifying technology.
I want to just talk about the author of a mimer in the Kesedra on Parshat Vayishlach, where he talks about Yaakov and Esau, and how Yaakov is the good, which is like Ares, the Otim, the Reuben, and then Esau is the Taizu, which is he has a great life, but he doesn't have a Canaan.
But by the way, just stop it. That's one of the secrets of why we want to do this.
Right.
Because Esau has huge power. And if that power can be translated from violence into what?
So essentially that's what I wanted to ask you was, how come, then Yaakov, his intentions were that he wanted to bring Mashiach. His intentions were, listen, I corrected myself while I was with Laban for these 14 years that I was working for Laban, and he wanted to see where Esau was holding if he had corrected himself, and then they could bring the two together, the great life and the vessel. How come we had to wait like thousands of years in order for Hasidus to come out instead of it like?
How come?
Question
on God.
Hasidus is the way to to bring this great life into the right Kalim. If this really is the Tikkun Olam, this is the way to correct the world.
Right. Right. So the simple answer is that's the question that you can't ask because that's God's
place. Right,
but,
right.
On the other hand, Lifun Saragra, according to the amount of difficulty, is the value of the reward depends on. So, according to the depth of the darkness and the extent of time of the darkness, the light which will be revealed will be that much more powerful.
So, who is Asa now?
Well, it's the incarnations of the Roman, Edom and the Roman mentality. And I've thought about this a lot, so I'm just going to say what I thought. Because I've not heard this, but it seems to me. What was the greatness of Rome? Technology. Bridges. Bridges. That's how they conquered everything. Huh?
Yes.
They were able to, weaponry, sophisticated technology of weaponry, of transportation, of edifice, of building, etc., etc. That's what they did. That's what they brought to the poor. It's like the British bringing the musket to the Indians. You know, that was another story. That didn't work out so well for the British, but it worked out well for the Romans, right? So who in the world epitomizes technology? Epitomizes technology. Yeah, but China and it was the U.S. Yeah, the first world country. Well, number one. What are the first world countries? The number ones, the ones that have mastered technology. And that's why that's the incarnation of man. And to the extent, and I've really thought a lot, extent that the technology becomes a fixation, and the utilization of technology that has to do with edification and morality is not on the table at all. It's just the strength of the technology. I mean, 2 days ago, last Thursday, Mark Zuckerberg renamed and reinvented and even his own small smartphone. He reinvented his company called Meta. Why is he calling it Meta? You've seen the Matrix. All you guys always reference the Matrix, right?
Yeah.
Everybody references
Facebook
Meta.
Facebook is now Meta?
Facebook is now Meta.
Get out.
No, Meta is, Facebook is now a subsidiary, and it's not exactly a subsidiary. It's a part of a larger company called Meta.
Whoa.
The company is Meta. Right.
And I
over the weekend, what? What are we doing?
I started a program called
Sophia.
The
Meta.
So why did he call it Meta?
He calls it Meta for something, I guess, this is another tangent, but I guess it's worth talking about. It's worthwhile. You've heard of the metaverse? You know what the metaverse is? The universe, the metaverse? The multiverse, the universe beyond?
Yeah.
Now, we are talking about the universe beyond. This is the universe beyond. But the Roman technological vision of the metaverse is everybody is subsumed in virtual reality until there are no boundaries between real reality and virtual reality. And what's the purpose? Fun. Feeling good. It's the death of humanity.
Self-serving.
What I want? I mean, I once, when I was first involved, I used to be involved a lot in developing internet technologies for companies. And I had a fantasy. At one stage of it, we'll be able to call up Mendy's, and the food would come onto the phone. Because that's what happened in Star Wars, in what? No, beam me up. What's that program? Star Trek, right? And it's logical. I mean, what is food? It's just a collection of molecules and subatomic particles. So we'll just reconfigure them into, and broadcast them, and then reconfigure them over here. That's William Shatner. That's interesting. They took William Shatner to outer space, right? Because it's something that the mind can conceive of. That there'll be no difference between virtual reality and physical reality. Not necessarily evil in itself. I mean, and just like technology is not evil in itself, but when the vision of it doesn't have Yahushua minus the divinity that's involved, but just in the pleasuring, and as you said, the yaciousness, the fulfilling of filling my order. You know, it's a funny thing to me is when people go into a restaurant and say, "I need a burger." You don't need a burger. You want a burger. You're collecting for a burger. You don't need a burger, what?
No.
It's not one of the basic needs. Right. Your dream. Yeah.
They can read
what's going on in your brain.
They can read.
Well, there are computers now that you can put on apparatus and think, and the words come on the screen.
Yeah.
Yes, right now, today.
Is that what ALS is?
that what the
I don't know what his I don't know what technology he's using.
No, I, could, technology
I don't know what he's using. Asha Chris. You know Asha Chris, right? That's where you heard it from. His kids are using it. Right. Right.
So they
So that's the Roman Empire, where technology is pushed and pushed. It's all about technology, and with no morality and no certainly no divinity, huh?
Wait, before we say there's no morality, I think it's what it's used for. It's sort of like the Gemara, where there's a discussion about the Roman roads, because as you said, Rome built the technology, the roads, the aqueducts. And the question is, are the roads in order for the Romans to have conquest, or are the roads in order for us to reach the base medrash, for us to reach whatever the issue of the Seder? And it's the same thing with technology.
You're absolutely right. Technology is utilitarian and valueless. And I mean, you know, from a perspective of ethics, it's neutral. That's the word I'm looking for.
Right, and it's the vehicle, however we use it. And I don't know if anyone else was participating or watching the convention of Shluchim, but the first that was announced when it came, I always love the roll call. For me, I find the roll call so amazing and inspiring. And the first part of the roll call was cyberspace. Chabad of cyberspace. That's gorgeous.
Well, I have to tell you a secret. I was a backdoor neighbor of Yossi Kazin. Yossi Kazin passed away. Yossi Kazin was the founder of Chabad Lubavitch in cyberspace. So he and I were pretty close. And I was involved in developing technology that ultimately became internet technology. And together we did this thing called Festival of Light. It was the first internet experience that Chabad.org ever organized. And it was a Hanukkah thing. And this was in 1995, 1 year after the browser was invented by Mosaic and Netscape. And we put this thing together, 8 branches of the Nor, each one, you click on a branch, and each one was a different trick. And we hand-coded a spinning dreidel so that you could click on the dreidel, and if you got your points, one of my jobs was to go out and enlist a Judaica supply store to give gifts for people who... And it was an amazing project, and it became for me like a model of virtually everything I did after that in the realms of technology. But there was an example. I'm not extolling it for my own sake, just an example of how that technology could be used. Chabad.org itself is an example of using technology, which is neutral, in a holy way. So that's not Rome. Rome is great at developing technology, and Jews... Real Jews are good at
real
Jews, ones who are not not called Masecha L'Shem Shemayim, but called L'Shem Shemayim. That's all of us, real Jews. The reality of all of us, right? If that's applied to technology, that's my project, though, to develop a social media marketing machine for L'Shem Mitzvahs. And I'm trying to find so anybody else is interested in it. Yeah, that's my project. Okay. He'd be interested? Yeah, no, I need, well, okay, another subject.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to talk about on the side. Okay. Book is shame. Back to our story. So, but your question is a good jumping off point. What it means, chutzah, right? We're emphasizing this chutzah. What goes to the chutz? Not just the person in relationship to the world, but the person and the world become one. That's the chutzah, that where the world becomes conscious of its divineness or divinity. It's elokus, it's godliness. Okay, shame. And just like the shlichus of Yaakov to Esau was Malachim Mamish, which we've already touched up above, right? Bringing the spirit to the world so that the world becomes spiritual. It gets transformed. And certainly not that one's involvement with the world has a negative influence on you who's not coming to him. Like it. Right, so just like in the same, using the same metaphor of the Malachi Mamash, the spirit and the flesh connecting as one, so this is also the role of the Neshama, to Mavara the goof, to rectify the goof, and awaken the goof to the body, awaken the body to its true existence, which it is that it's only existing as an appendage in the divine organism of creation, and is meant to do its part to for the health of the organism, and which is in parentheses, which as Esther pointed out, that Esau belongs to the world of Toyu, and Yaakov belongs to the world of Tikkun. Do we need to have a word about that, or is it Tikkun and Toyu? Okay, but again, but the important thing in this mimer about Toyu is the strength, the power. I mean, till now, the power is of the sword prevails, the power of the rocket ship, the power of the, you know, sophisticated weaponry, right? But there's power. But suppose all that were weapons to kill the negativity, to kill the Yetzer Hara, weapons to propel oneself to deeper levels of connectivity and consciousness with God, right? That would be the elevation and the realization of the power of Esau, as Esav is brought into Kedusha. So how is this done? By each and every one of us giving power to, what's the word he uses? Arousing in each one of ourselves the Malachim, the angel of ourselves, the Neshama of ourselves.
The reality of us.
Yeah. And that goes to your question. And with that, if each one of us did that individually and then all of us collectively, that would mavar, that would rectify all the problems in the world. I have a little meme that I have on my phone that someone sent me. You don't see the microphone, but it's a reporter whom you don't see face to face with the rabbi. And he asked the Rebbe, what's your message to the non-Jews? And the Rebbe, without missing a beat, says, world peace can be is attainable if everyone does, if the non-Jews do the seven mitzvahs. World peace. World peace. Levar es in yoni. And that's what we have to do.
It sounds like it's not much the Jews themselves.
So what's our job?
What?
This is the Rebbe spells it all out. All these sifas in the mems, he spells it out.
That's what he pointed out. The
Rebbe
said, okay, when everyone gets along,
he said, but now the Jews should do the
non-Jews.
The non-Jews. Yeah.
At first glance, he didn't say that the Jews need to have
office job. He wasn't asked. He doesn't ask what the Jews. He was asked, what's this question? What's your message to the non-Jews?
Oh, okay.
And that was his message to the non-Jews.
Yeah, but
world peace is achieved when they all do that. And you could ask, so what's our job? And there's other sequels. See, like it's a metaphor where if you're planting something, you first have to plow the ground. So the seven mitzvahs make the world ready. They bring the world to a state where we can bring God, what's the word? You know, the famous from the Midrash.
Huh?
Make a dwelling place.
Beautiful.
That now the ground is ready, and we can make a deuter layer sport of a thing. So the two will go together. And many sikhs, where he says, again, you got me off on this tangent, that this is a prerequisite for the
Jews. Well, I mean, grateful. I can share this so much. If you give me some information, I'll share it with my
class. Okay, we'll talk about it. We'll go through it.
Yeah, but the directive of people.
Yeah, that's another story, right?
A lot of people.
They don't want it. Right. That's correct. Very good. That's correct. Yeah, right. Right.
People are so open to
Listen, I've had conversations with people like this, because I have to in order to get, sort of get a reality test. What are you telling me? I'm talking to a Christian. I have a religion. You're telling me there's another religion that I'm supposed to be? No, that's no good. That doesn't work either, right? Yeah? No, I wouldn't. I'd say what? So, again, I don't want to sidetrack, but part of the mission of what I'm trying to do is is collect and create messaging that's appropriate for, that resonates with people. Right? That's part of what we're trying to do here, right? Is turn what's on the paper into something that we can walk away with and say, oh yeah, I got something from this class. And I get something from this class. Okay. You want to continue? What time? Well, we have time. I'm hoping we would finish this secret. You guys let me off on the side. Okay. And since... Now, since the rectifying the world can be done according to the first level, which is the normal level that we do, that everything in the normal level, that everything would be should be l'shem shem, for the sake of heaven. And what that really means, yeah, it's a good thing, but the neshama, its effect on the body is that it's dominating, it's subduing, ruling over.
It is ruling the body, but it's secretly, like secretly ruling the body. But no, you can't even tell that the actual spirituality is ruling the body.
Right. Yes. So this is the powers of the neshama, which are enclosed in the body, which is busy with them, you know, with the bodily affairs. Al-Yadam, through them, through these powers which are invested through the Yin and Yang Oil. You're taking the powers of your soul and you're investing them in the affairs of the world by treating the world the way Torah wants you to treat the world.
Okay.
Hmm? Oh. Harihem. So there, yeah. Yeah. We'll go further.
Alright,
so okay, let's go back. Alright. So you're having an effect on the things in the world, right? The affairs of the world are taking a place. You haven't melded completely that there's just godliness. You're not living with the consciousness of Ein Od Milvado. You've got, I'm a Jew, and I've got a mission to do, and, oh, here's something I can do it with, this piece of water, drink of water, all right? But the glass of water is taking up a place, right? It's, what was the expression? It has a metzias of its own. On this, the Magid explained, his explanation explained, Chitaktus hakavani b'inyan habirurim is that the whole end game, the whole purpose of the birurim, the rectification, is dafka shekachosoyha shel haneshama, that the powers of the neshama, ha'oiskim in yamangashmi, which are occupied in physical things, these are the malachim in their shlichas to Esau, hem barakta b'chinas shel mamish, that you do it in such a way, yes, there are things in the world, but these things in the world really only exist for me, you, each one of us, to come to them and bring out their godly intention. What's the purpose of this water? That I should become healthy. What's the purpose I should be healthy in order to serve God? What's the purpose of this piece of fruit? The purpose of this piece of fruit is for eating. It was designed for eating. And why does God want me to eat this? Again, so I'll get a certain nutritional value that my body needs in order to serve Him. So, but they're secondary. They're important. But they're all subsumed. The Nefesh HaLakis is shalit over them, ruling over them. So that's the purpose, that the Ruchnias should rule over the Gashmias, that the Malachim should rule over the Mamash. Malachim. This is when Yaakov sent angels to Esau. So Rashi says, Malachim Mamash. He means they were really angels. They weren't men. They were angels. And the whole Sikha began with an explanation of the Magid, or Mezer Shemagid's interpretation of that. What's another meaning or inner meaning of Malachim Mamash? Not just that they were angels and not men, but the angelness of them, their spirituality, had to influence the mamash, the mamashas. And not that the mamashas should...
That's
the second stage. The first thing is it really exists, and I have to do something. I have to utilize it. The second stage is what you're saying, that it really doesn't exist. Then nothing exists except God. Right. That's the second stage. But this is the first stage, that the rakmi b'chinas al mamish, that the stuff that you're working with is only a mamish, only a something of a course, this kind of thing, and you have the ability to influence it. Shehem tefelim uvetolim yuchadim betachus b'chinas aruknis, that the stuff should become nullified, bottle, secondary, and united, completely united with the spiritual of the neshama.
That's a totally different way then of looking at the sense that Yaakov and Esav were both to be buried on the same day. Because without Yaakov in the world to be misakein the mamish of Esav, then Esav had no purpose to exist. Am I understanding this correctly?
Yeah, I'm understanding it correctly. And it relates to the questions that were asked earlier. What's the purpose of the darkness? The darkness knows this deep inside. There's no secrets in the dark. It's both ways in the Torah.
Some say that
first it says
darkness is there
to help make the light. First it says you created light, right, and then it says night and it says light and day. But then in another pasuk it says day and night. So this is a big topic in Chassidus. You've come across it. It depends on your point of view. Okay? So put it this way. On the physical plane we have energy and matter. Right? Energy and matter. Einstein told us in one little equation that they're really interchangeable. Energy equals matter times E equals MC squared. They're really interchangeable. So which comes first and which is second there? Primary saying depends on your point of view. So the most interesting thing is that God, in his infinite wisdom, when he thought about that you could say such a thing, what he wanted the Gashmius. He wanted this physical world, right? Now to create it, he had to put energy into it. And energy is light, and kaling, lights and vessels. He really wants the vessels. So since he really wants the vessels, this is first get step one. You got step one. What his vision is, all a bit of tzoynei livro. It rose up in his mind to create, right? So to create, he envisions the lowliest of the low, the planet Earth with all of its dirt and everything that's in it. And why? So that's where he's invested, and that's the secret of why the Gashmius is so powerful. Atomic energy. Where does it come from? It comes from the fact combustion energy. Why does you can light something and it gives energy? Because God has invested himself in it. The divine energy is invested specifically in the love. And that's why he wants to dwell in place in the lower world, because that was first in thought. What's first in thought is last in deed. So the last in deed, the physical, represents what's highest in his thought. The darkness precedes the light in his thought. In the act of creating, the light comes before the darkness. It depends what you talk about, lechaschila. In his first way of thinking, the first thing he thinks about... Yeah, the first thing he thinks about is not the light. The first thing he thinks about is olam hazeh with a person on top, on the planet. That's his tachlis. That's tachlis. Look this way. If you want to go to Hawaii, right? What's top of your mind? I want to go to Hawaii. I'm thinking about Hawaii. I start thinking about all this stuff. That's what's the most important thing to me. So the most important thing is Hawaii and what I'm going to do there. Okay, but now I have to get there, right? So get there is a process, and that's the process first, or and then Caleb.
So what was the goal?
Maya Kodem, Acha V'Kedem Yitzarton. It's a pasuk in Tehillim. First and last, you create it. It depends on how you're looking at it. Yeah. In the beginning, there was the angel. Before there was any light, there was just the angel, right? And then the angel decided that in order to create stuff, I'm going to have to do something. And what did he do? He let loose this or angel. So you see the or,
so,
look at it now. Think about this. Yeah, go ahead.
Is that, because she was asking you about the stuff had no existence in that book, cool. Right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, because... Choshet has a mamashut. You have everything in davening. You say Yoyse Ero Bari Chayshe. He formed light, and he created darkness. We're used to thinking of darkness is a creation. Yeah, it's a very. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on here.
If the malachim are making the mamashut, but they didn't see work.
Yeah. Yeah. Another
they didn't have any existence.
Who?
Whatever
the,
it is.
The stuff that they're borrowing? Yeah.
The malachim.
The malachim also had no existence.
Right.
Right.
And I said, what does it mean? It seems to me that basically they're respecting the malachim.
Right. So, good. So good. Let's stay with that. Think of the malachim as a light, so, as a light shining into the darkness,
so
right?
If they can shine up to a scale that is nullified, then from the beginning, there were no existence in the Dabal.
Well, you're right. From that point of view, you're right.
As Inyash, no existence in the Dabal. As Lachoshet has no existence.
Except that it does. Why does it do? We think that, and as you said, most of us think that darkness is the absence of light. Right? It's nothing.
Darkness is
just, no, it's the absence.
This is nothing. You take the no light, you get darkness. But it's not anything, right? Look, but the Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says, Yoytze or Uboirei Chayshe. He formed light, and he created darkness. Darkness is a creation. Now just think, I mean, I know it's astounding to think about this when you first get into it. And another little thing that's latent in those two words. I'm sure you're nodding because you've learned this. That Yetzirah, there's a world called Yetzirah, and which is the higher world?
Bria.
So which is higher, darkness or light?
Darkness.
Darkness.
But
I don't get you.
Yeah, it's just like
Yaakov and Esau.
No, wait.
So that's the darkness.
Speaking English too, don't worry about it. Yaakov, I just want to make sure people will speak English.
He was the second guy that came out. Right, there's another point, right? Which was created first? Yes, but in turn, so that's it. It depends how you look at it, right? If you look at, who came out first.
Yeah, in this world, of the physicality world, there is an existence of darkness. But if we would leave this world without Hasidus, then we would say, yeah, it's true, there is such an existence. Right. But I'm saying, out of the point that we are studying Hasidus, I'm asking to the depth of the things.
The depth
is it Be'emet has Be'emet existence? Like,
yes.
According to Hasidus?
Yes. Yes.
In the world of Hasidus, darkness and light are the same. There's no only light. It's only differentiation. Only down here is differentiation.
You actually said it. Because in conception.
Well, what came first? The darkness.
The darkness. Okay. That's Nahal. And that's MS.
But the darkness, the darkness has higher light than the light.
Exactly. Okay. You got it. You got it. Black light. We have black light, right? Black holes, what time is it? It's 9:45. Gee, we didn't finish the sikha. I'll just finish the oys, okay? I'm just going to finish this particular oys, okay? So we got ratchet number one is Kol Ma'asecha L'Shem Shemayim. There's other stuff, but we're going to, okay. That's the first ratchet. The first shlav, right? Shehen, and that thing, that stuff, there is stuff out there, right? There is stuff. But it's the failing of Atolim Yechodim Etakos B'Finis as Rokh Neshev Neshama. But it's meant to be nullified, clarified, rectified by the Neshama. V'hainu Shegama Mederek Erechog Nailus Neshama. Now you should know that even the highest levels of the Neshama, Hamayin the Neshama, which is what we talked about, the big deal, the fountain, not the water, but the fountain of the Neshama, Shilamayla Mislabjiz B'Nem Gashmi, which the fountain head is higher than being enclosed in physical things, that is Meira Umisgala Ba'oifen Shel Hafotze. That's what is meant to be revealed. And that's the second shlach, the Rosh Hashanah of Hasidus, the next notch. Not just that we are meant to bring our godliness to the world, but the world is meant to be informed in such a way that it realizes there's nothing else besides God. Ba'oifen Shel Hafotze. That's what we have to do. We have to bring that out. Rispash is built in Mubelis in a way that doesn't allow any limitation into the Bechinus of Chutzah Mamish, into the outside.
Wait,
that's the end. It's not the end of the Sikha, it's the end of for tonight.